Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, The Deep Dive, featuring your esteemed hosts, Andy Monitor and Drew Dinzik, powered by BetSperts.
Welcome to The Deep Dive. This is March, Andy.
It's the 19th. It's been March.
Let's get mad. We're going to give you guys everything you need to know, everything you ever wanted to know about how to win money on the, or really just how to enjoy the NCAA tournament. Don't bet on it.
Does it still say that on the brackets?
No, it doesn't. I think they finally gave up on don't bet on it.
So embarrassing.
But honestly, like, that's kind of not even really joking advice. Like, there's ways to make money in the tournament. There's fun ways to play pools. Certainly find a survivor pool. Get involved in a Calcutta. Definitely do your traditional bracket pools, particularly the ones with your friends with coming with bragging rights. You know, you shouldn't be thinking you have a big... But don't come in this with a big swinging dick thinking you have an edge against these markets at this time of year, because you probably don't. And these are weird markets anyway, where you just have so much volume that's so... recreational that does kind of change the way things kind of can be interpreted. Like, if you're seeing a big move, doesn't mean like the world's sharpest group is on that side. Like, it doesn't. Like, there's lots of noise in the
especially
market,
especially with the Thursday to, you know, the Saturday and Sunday games, where that market is, you know, that's a different kind of market than the ones that are going to sit up all week.
Cool.
Because those are instant reaction, and we have, you know, just that quick 36-hour turnaround, 48 hours. That,
you're absolutely right.
Those are a little different.
Difference in maturity of markets. No question.
And I did talk about this too, because I was, as I said to you guys, I was doing a different podcast, and it was more aimed towards some, you know, some people who hadn't bet a lot of college basketball yet, but they like college basketball because it was a North Carolina-based thing, and they had just legalized sports betting. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest, you know, we don't do enough responsible gambling talk, but like, take it easy, cool your jets, guys. So if you haven't bet a lot of basketball, let's not go fire on like 18 games tomorrow, because I mean, there's like six, you know, we don't even have the tournament really yet. There's like six on, because we got NIT, we got CBI, we got CIT, we got play-ins. You're going to have, you know, four tournaments going on at once. You're going to have so many games, you have second halves. Like, a little tip, I don't know if I've ever brought this up on a show, but something I do, especially when I start to feel like I'm maybe live betting a little too much soccer during the day, I have a notebook that I always have next to me for notes and things for meetings and whatnot. I'll just flip the page, I'll write down all my bets, and I will add up that number. And I will write a big negative sign in front of it and be like, am I losing this? Yeah,
we're not going to ruin our weekend, right? Okay.
It's not common. It's not likely, but you absolutely, it's not like getting hit by lightning going 0-10. You could go 0-10, man. These things happen. If that number is going to affect your ability to pay rent, oh, I for sure have. Yeah, it's going to affect your ability to pay rent or... Yeah. You know, buy your girlfriend something nice. Pump the brakes.
Let's introduce our guest. So nobody wants to hear me talk about college basketball. I don't know the first thing about this shit. I don't bet this shit. And honestly, my process for how I bet NBA is so incredibly different from how you can. It might as well be a different sport, because I go player level, and I mean, you got player data for these guys. You got a good idea of, after 32 games of some of these guys, that is going to be their entire career is what they played as freshmen this year. And they might be the most important person. Okay, good luck. You think you can nail that? Good luck. So with that, we reached out to a good friend in our network, Mr. Tim at THold42 on Twitter, if you're looking for him. The reason we reached out to him is pretty obvious. If you don't do a lot of college basketball research by your damn self, you need to have friends who do. And the friend that we know that does the most research, and the proof is in the pudding, because he puts it together in a very useful reference, is Mr. Tim Hold, THold42 on Twitter. Tim, welcome back to the Deep Dive. It's great to see you again. I hope you were doing well. And how's your college season been?
Yeah. Thanks for having me, gents. Always, good to be on the program. College basketball, to be honest, I was treading water a little bit earlier in the season, so kind of got a little bit more involved as we got closer towards conference tournaments and whatnot. So, the same for the general public, I imagine, too. Once March comes around, and as you mentioned, those folks in North Carolina now with legal betting, they might get a little bit too wet on the college tournament. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I said that you're going to start to hate watching young men take free throws late in the game.
Ooh, sure.
People that bet Brown, you know, and
I mean, when it's exactly. Like, hey, there are some very respected players in the space who had losing seasons this year for the first time in a long time. So don't if you treaded water, if you came out even, I think you can hold yourself head up high compared to some of the other very notable and well publicized stories. And we'll kind of leave it at that. So talk to me a little bit about your process and about kind of how you see sort of the current state of data and across the college basketball landscape.
Yeah, I think everyone kind of gravitates towards KenPom now. I think he's more well known than he's ever been in the space, probably. To be honest, I mean, that's where a lot of the data that I pull for in this sheet comes from. I still use it to a degree. It's definitely something reliable, but there are some other opportunities out there that people have used, like, you know, Haslam Metrics, Torvik, other things. Torvik, I added some stuff to the sheet this year that I haven't in past from Torvik that I really found interesting, such as like stats from literally the last month of the season from compared to where a team started at the beginning of the year, offensive and defensive efficiency wise. So I think that's been pretty helpful as well going through this process. But it's a lot, man. It's a 68 teams, right? That there's a lot of data. There's a lot of stuff out there. People are talking about literally the same thing, because there's nothing else going on but the NBA, right? So, yeah.
Sorry, hockey. I'm fading. I'm full fading Ken Pomeroy this March. I don't think his head's in the game. We got the Women's World Curling Championships on right now. Like, there's no way he can focus on both things. Again, loves curl. I guarantee he's betting on curling and stuff. Like, he always does. He always has, like, curling takes if you follow him. But no, well, maybe anybody who's looking for some of those data sites, I'll put them in the show notes. KenPom, Bart Torvik does a great job. There's another one called Hoop Math that has a bunch of really good stuff. I just should go through all my, like, bookmarks here.
Yeah, Torvik
does a really good one with the bracketology as well.
I'll stump for Torvik just because visually,
it's good.
He kills it. It's
nicer. It's easier to split out some of the data if you want to look at just conference games.
Yeah.
If you want to look at some smaller splits of data,
filtering.
The site is pretty solid for filtering. So, and that one is free. So I don't know how he he does that one for free. So
I don't know.
He should probably charge money for that. It's a very good site.
I'm just checking right now. AdBlock Plus is blocking zero ads on that site too. So he is just a solid gold, true blue, loves college basketball and wants you to have the correct data so that you can put your understanding of these teams into context. Okay. Well, do you think in general wide availability of, I guess, like, what's the right word? Like tempo, you know, I guess Torvik's kind of data.
Offensive, defensive efficiency.
Specifically, the tempo adjusted. Or Ken Palmer's efficiency adjusted, having that in, you know, as a tool, really did change the game for a lot of people from a betting standpoint, I got to imagine, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, so many people now, podcasts, live shows, they're referencing efficiencies all the time, 3-point rate, 3-point percentage, rebound rate, stuff like that. And I heard you earlier in the week talking about, I forget what team it was, but somebody on just a terrible defensive rebounding team, and people weren't really talking about that years, even 4 or 5 years ago. So it's definitely becoming more common knowledge, it feels like.
Okay. Are there specific statistical kind of profiles or fingerprints, I guess, that you look for as you look at the teams at the top who might be on upset alert or the teams at the bottom who might be Cinderella potential?
Yeah, I think teams at the top that we kind of, on the sheet that I put together, there we have red flag teams, which basically they're a team that does something good on one end and not good on the other end. So like Alabama, They stick out right away. They're great offense, dog shit on defense. So
defense, sure.
Yeah, very optional. So that's something that stands out. Also, for some of the upsets potentially, when it comes, you mentioned tempo before, some of the bigger disparities in tempo, sometimes some Cinderella teams can kind of make difficult for a top team. That's something also that has worked in the past as well.
Let's dig into that a little bit.
There's some weird ones. I was going to ask about, I got to check my notes. I think it's Vermont. As a bit of a plotter, but as a conference, it's a fast conference. So they're like the one slow team in the fast conference. All the other teams tend to be above average for tempo in general. So they're playing those teams, but they're just way more talented and they're beating them. And it's one of those where you wonder what happens when they go up against a team with fast tempo who's actually good and is not like New Hampshire or UMass Lowell. I don't even know if I say that right. I feel like you should have a heavier Boston accent than that. Lowell.
No. Lowell. Like Lowell, like with the L-U-L-L. All right. So do you hold, I guess, is there stock in the kind of fundamental math explanation of if you're playing slow and you are shortening the game, you are creating an advantage for yourself if you are an underdog, because every other sport that I follow, that's pretty tried and true.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, that's how it's going to work, right? Less possessions, less margin for error there. Like, the biggest difference in styles of play in the first round is Illinois and Morehead State. Morehead State plays at 335th in the country tempo-wise. They might as well be crawling. Illinois plays 56th. So, and I don't feel that great about Illinois to begin with, but that's the most glaring one. Similar for Auburn and Yale. Yale plays at 327. Auburn plays at 58th. So, some of these teams are just going to get run out of the gym. That happens. The disparity in athletes for some of these bigger programs, but it is something to take a look at.
Okay, you think this cuts both ways? Like, if you are especially high efficiency offensively, you know, in particular, why play slow? And I specifically would look at UConn, because like UConn, I didn't think of them as a slow team last year at all when they went on their title run. But they're coming in right now, what, bottom 100? Bottom 50. Bottom 50 in terms of adjusted tempo right now. That's what in the world happened? And like, are they actually opening themselves up to a potential upset by doing that?
I mean, potentially, but man, they're just so, just watching them from that Big East tournament where you thought they had them on the ropes. Who was it in the final? And then they just kind of blitzed them in the second half. Yeah. I find it tough to fade them. I really don't think them playing that slow is an issue, just because they are so efficient on offense. I mean, they're number one in the country for a reason. So, it is a good point too, because this sheet is not going to give you picks. It's not going to tell you what to gamble on. But if you think that is something that is going to be effective, where a slower tempo team that can kind of take advantage of UConn, I mean, take your shots.
That's the tough part too, is just nobody can, I mean, RIP Tweety Dimes, who probably could, but nobody can sit and watch every minute of every game. God, if you guys get that reference, God bless you. That was an all-time tweet from back in the day. But that's where, you know, I think a combination of these free, or I mean, KenPom's like $20 a year, guys. Yeah. If you really get into college basketball, you probably got to shell out the $20. But that's where it's nice to do some comparison stuff, like when you're talking about a fast-paced team that you just haven't watched, because maybe you just didn't watch a lot of America East ball or a lot of Colonial, and it's not called the Colonial, it's called the Coastal now. But you know, hoop math has some of that stuff. You almost got to go site to site to site, because nobody has everything I want, where you can look at some of these, you know, they have transition offense numbers, like what percentage of their shots are in transition. Well, how, you know, and you could also look at, you know, 3-point rate, you know, not just how many 3 points they're making, how many you know, 3 points they're taking in relation to 2 points. As far as, you know, is this team a fast break team, or is this a team that's down there and is just chucking outside shots immediately? Because not every fast paced team is fast paced for the same reason. So it is good to know why a team has a tempo like that, I think, when you start looking at the stylistic differences and how a team can, you know, if they are, we're not a fast break team. It doesn't matter if the other team has a really good fast break defense. It might just, oh shit, this team has a bad perimeter D. And this is a three-point shooting team where they're getting down there every 16 seconds, three-pointer up. You know, it's tough, again, because there's still the huge skill disparity when we're looking at some of these early games. And basically every upset ever has been – I mean, talk about the Purdue game. I mean, what happened with Edie? I mean, it's just – sometimes when the offense runs through one guy and that guy doesn't have the best day, and really good comment in the Discord chat the other day – somebody said, like, Purdue might just run based on how they ref Edie. Like, if they're going to, like, you know, if they're going to let people play some, you know, you don't want to do that in the first round. I, like, they can't be just fucking them over for that. But, you know, later in the tournament, you know, if they're going to let people get a little handsy and aggressive, Purdue might look like hell again.
They might. I mean, because I guess this is a good time to kind of, well, actually, before we entirely move off the Connecticut question, and I get it, like, they're a truck.
They're very good.
But like, I think as the NCAA is wont to do, they stack the East with very good teams. Because I don't think they necessarily want Connecticut to repeat, or if they do, they just want it to be hard fought. Ironic, because Connecticut's win last year came through the toughest region by far. It's, you know, getting the toughest region 2 years in a row is a little bit of a bad luck if you're a Husky fan, I suppose. Like, talk me out of, like, going bananas land here on if Northwestern gets through this 8-9, because Northwestern plays slow too. And if you're playing slow and they're playing slow, then this is going to be a few, you know, there's not going to be many possessions in that game. This is, of course, I'm talking about Northwestern, UConn specifically. And if you're playing slow and if you're the underdog, you know what you need? You need variance on your side. You need to be able to make some three-point shots. You know who's third in three-point efficiency in the in all of college basketball? Oh, sorry. Fourth. My bad.
Huge.
Northwestern. Cap. Northwestern is top five in college basketball in three-point efficiency. And that's going to put UConn in a little bit of a tight spot if those threes fall. And, like, here's kind of one of the key things that I think really impacted Purdue negatively last year and why they were, like, a huge red flag, black mark right through their, you know, right through their name, you know, as you looked at the bracket last year is, you know, if you get into a situation where there are very few possessions in a given game and you are at a disadvantage because your opponent is hitting threes, guess what? You need to find a way to get more possessions to close that gap. And there are only two ways to do that. And that is you are getting offensive rebounds on your misses, or you are creating defensive turnovers. And the defensive turnover one is more sticky in terms of kind of identifying the teams that really tend to underwhelm. And, like, you know, this is a little bit subjective because it cuts both ways. If you're like a truck of a team and you're so damn good that you don't really even need to try on defense, you don't need to like risk fouling, like, yeah, your turnover rate is going to suck. But Connecticut is way low this year. Like, they kind of have two indicators that are telling me that this is not as good of a team as the team that ultimately won as a four seed last year. 232nd in the country in turnover defense in terms of producing a turnover on a defensive possession, and 325th now in terms of tempo. So they're playing with a little bit of fire with those two particular metrics. And if ultimately they run up against Northwestern in a 1-9, like, I could see it happening. And, like, you know, you stare at Northwestern's line across the Bartorvik page and, well, where are they sucking? Well, they're not great at offensive rebounding. Well, okay, we're talking about a situation where they're playing with elite. We're talking about their threes are falling. Who cares if they're good or bad at offensive rebounding? I don't care. You've already lost if they're not going in. They're bad at free throw defense, which is to say they're putting teams on the free throw line pretty aggressively. That's ref subjectives to a degree. And I don't really know one way or the other if Connecticut is good at making their free throws. But again, if you're playing with the lead, like, you're going to be less inclined to foul. So that might not matter. And you know, they're not great at 3-point defense specifically. So if Connecticut ultimately has to shoot their way back in, that's probably the way it goes. But you're still talking about something that might be more like a coin flippy game, in my opinion. Let's just pretend that Connecticut finds their way through there. They may get Auburn potentially in a 1-4. That looks like a tough matchup. They may get Iowa State in a 1-2 and in the Elite Eight. That looks like a tough matchup. Am I making a strong enough case here to kind of dissuade any of you guys from having Connecticut make a deep run in this tournament?
You make some good points. Northwestern, if they're hot from three, I mean, I don't think many people are going to think that's a game. If they see that in the next round, they'll be shocked to see that. But looking at the three-pointer and the points you made, I mean, I'm not going to tell you that's crazy. I still, it's not strong enough for me to necessarily think they get taken down per se. But I mean, it's the argument can be made. I'm not going to tell you no.
I'm a little out on that take. Donaldson's pointing out too that they've had some injuries for most of March.
True, that's fair.
And I don't know. I don't know that I actually have the stats to back this up. I've tried to find this, some of the overall defensive conference stats, but the Big Ten in general has a very high 3-point rate as an entire league. And it's one thing if it's like eight teams in the Northeast that have this, but it's a big conference and they're like third or fourth as a league. I just think there might be bad perimeter defense in the Big Ten in general. It's a really home court advantage heavy league as well, where these teams win a disproportionate rate of games at home compared to the average. So I don't love these Big Ten teams trying to have to do that. But like you said, if shit's falling, shit's falling. Like it doesn't, even against a good defense, sometimes shit just falls and the other teams, you know, what are we going to do? Like suddenly we're in a dogfight with an 8 seed or 9 or wherever they're at.
It's wild though that UConn draws. See, like really, what I'm really after here is that I'm against UConn at price.
Yeah. No, like, it's a shitty price, like 4-1. I'm not ever taking a 4-1 to win the tournament.
And especially one where the 4 seed is the 5th best in the country by Barthag. And their 2 seed is the 4th best in the country by Barthag. Like you happen to have to go, you're going to have to go through hell to get to the Final Four. And at that point, you know, if you get Purdue and Houston as your next 2 rounds, like congratulations, you just had to beat, you know, 4 of the top 8 teams in the country to get, you know, you to back up your national title, which that kind of path is hell. I guess Purdue would be on the other side of the bracket. They'd have to go through, you know, the worst case would be, I guess, UNC.
Still, it's never going to be easy Arizona. To win a title.
Arizona.
Yeah. It's never going to be easy to win a title, Drew, but
sure.
It's also never going to be easy to cash a 4-1 ticket.
Sure.
Sucks. And real quick in the chat from somebody chatting from Twitter/X, whatever. Does this get recorded? Yeah, this is on YouTube as well. You can come find us Deep Dive podcast on YouTube if you want to watch this after the Virginia game. I don't know. Hopefully you're a fan or you have some bets because there's no good reason to watch a Virginia game otherwise.
It's a tough watch.
I don't know. Tim, did you have any?
I got a totally different take on this.
I mean, I have players.
You want every other basketball game all week to feel much more enjoyable. Watch that Virginia game. Like you're going to set the bar very low.
To the point.
You're gonna give yourself entertainment for days. But yeah, sorry.
It is getting the easy one out first. Something about Mary style before you go on the date. But Tim, did you look at that as far as like just pricing and anything historical or anything pop out for you? People love futures, and I know it's hard. I've hit one ever, and it was a dumb one basically because I found a number that was just a little high in Virginia the year after they fucked up. And that was, do you remember that team? They basically lost 3 games in a row. Like the amount of incredible stupid luck it takes to win all those games in a row is something. So
is that, I don't know,
any takes on that?
From about, I think, November, I think I jumped in on Arizona and North Carolina for the national championship. And of course they end up in the same pod. And they're honestly, you can probably get a similar price to what I had from back then. So I haven't added anything yet. Definitely not looking to add UConn at, like you said, at 4-1. One more point on UConn kind of their path. They're pretty much playing home games the whole way through.
That's fair.
They're in Brooklyn, and then they're in Boston, right? They don't need to get on a plane until Final Four. So just something to
that. That's true.
They always travel well. The Big East games might as well have been UConn home games, even against St. John's. So something to keep in mind. But anything else? I haven't added anything future-wise. That's not to say that I'm not going to. But, yeah, people love futures. I think the only big one I hit was Kansas a couple years ago.
That's fun, too. Those are going to be open all tournament long. Like, there's going to be updated. You know, we play the Thursday-Friday games. Even just the Thursday games, there's going to be updated. You know, regional prices are going to be updated to make the Elite Eight, everything. Those are a lot of fun. You can, I think that's maybe where the value is like just keeping track of, you know, this team is just peaking. This team looked great. This team did things I wasn't sure they could do against a better team because we haven't seen them play this kind of team yet. And I think I'm ready to take a dive on a long shot. You're getting a little worse odds, but you're working with a lot more information.
I got a couple of theories on futures that I just want to run by you. See if these pass the smell test. This is basically the same setup as a, as a tennis slam, right? Like and the philosophy of a tennis slam, when you see the draw, you're looking for imbalance and you want to be on the soft side and you want to take your shot in the futures pool with a team or player who's on the soft side. And I got to say, the way that this bracket was constructed looks pretty balanced to me. Like, I don't see a left versus right or, you know, other than the UConn particularly getting a tough region, I don't see anything that stands out as like, man, like you could, cause, and the reason is pretty obvious. You guys have all probably already all heard me say this before, but like what you want is to be sitting there watching some other high consequence game between Arizona and North Carolina, knowing that one of those teams has to lose and you don't have any skin in it. And you're going to benefit from that. Like, that's kind of the whole name of the game where, you know, you can sit back and let chaos ensue other places. And then you kind of scoop the equity because team, you know, X, who is, you know, represents this huge portion of the pool, is now gone. And so I don't obviously see that to be applied here. Maybe you guys do, in general. I know that there are people that like to take super duper long shots and just be like, hey man, this will be fun and I can hedge it at some point. With this many games, it is very, very, very tough to try to get like a hedge out of this, or a cash out that's anything meaningful. Like, it's just too tough. And so in that regard, if you like a long shot, game by game, almost certainly will play better because, you know, you, when you're deciding, hey, am I betting? I like a team that's not expected necessarily to win, but I like their path. But, you know, I, you know, or like, you know, hey, I can get, I can get,
Escarole.
Yeah. And I can get, you know, hey, they're going to have to, like, okay, what's the
Escarole over parlay? No, and Drew, just to quick interrupt that, like, that's the DM, I'm sure. You've gotten these, and Tim, you've probably had people ask you about this. Like, hey, how do you remember the first beard year? It was like, how do I hedge this huge Texas Tech ticket? Buddy, you're in the Elite Eight. You know any games? Like, start thinking about hedging off half your equity and then against a favorite, betting on a favorite. Yeah. Like, just doesn't work. You almost always have to wait until at least the Final Four, and then that number has to be massive. And honestly, you have to be hoping that there's some upsets anyway. Otherwise, you're trying to hedge by betting on a minus 400 favorite. So you're betting four times what you need to be to, you know, take off half of your exposure. It's so difficult. For the most part, you just got to let them ride until the final. Or like Drew's saying, do these rollovers. Because the best part about a rollover is you can go to rehab. You can quit. And say, I'm done. I'm kicking the habit. I'm done. It's over.
Yeah, pull the ejecto cito at any point in time. The last kind of comment on Tweed Dimes. Tweed Dimes is a great example, by the way, of a guy that used to do it all by watching the games. He was a video guy, and then he switched to the numbers. And you know, it's the evolution of a player to go from, you know, watching every game to just coming up with a numerical approach. You know, so good lesson learned there. I honestly, I don't see any kind of runaway, you know, soft spots here. It is fun to look at, you know, across books and see, you know, the differences in prices at rec books for some of the futures versus like the sharper pools. where there's way lower margin. You know, just in general, like go do a little math and, you know, do a little checking and just see what kind of trends observe, because it's pretty straightforward as far as who is ultimately being protected. I guess, you know, kind of one other key question for you about information. Injuries seem to be somewhat important this year. We got a number of teams who are kind of missing key players for this tournament. I am standing alone. I'm standing naked. I'm on a naked Houston Cougars corner here from a bet man made after, like, you know, kind of midway through the football season, I guess, or midway through the football playoffs, I guess. And don't love, you know, what I'm hearing about the shin injury for kind of their most important player. Do you have a general kind of thought about where to get injury information? Because, you know, those of us who bet NBA, like, that's like step two of your process, probably. Yeah. No idea where to find anything useful for college basketball.
Yeah, it's definitely not, to your point, like NBA, there's not necessarily reports that go out throughout the day for college teams. I mean, Twitter, honestly, like if you find a beat reporter for certain teams, they're usually pretty plugged in. But I haven't, and not that I've looked very hard, but I haven't really come across anything substantial that has good injury information. It's mostly just coming from Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, it's the group chat, isn't it? Like you find the group, cause you know, I mean, how many 360 whatever teams, you'd say beat reporters, but nobody's going to sit and pick through, you know, obviously if you're looking for a specific one, like, but I mean, the Kansas stuff got tweeted out pretty quick today where everybody saw that. But some of these smaller ones, it is harder to find, and that's where the group chat's big.
The, yes, the Kansas Jayhawks are in deep, deep, deep trouble. I don't know that they're ultimately going to lose round one because of these injuries, but they're certainly not the same team that their regular season data would suggest. And fingers crossed that Rodgers gets back for Houston and he's perfectly fine. Although I think Houston's round one and round two are soft enough, or at least I don't see a potential upset there that spooks me. So hopefully he can get better and be 100%. But
bracket wise though, Tim, do you think that's like a leverage spot? It's just taking, StatFox, that's a good point from the chat there.
Yeah,
that do you think leverage wise, it's just like, take Kansas to move three rounds. Like they're still a very good team. They still have a very good coach. They have a lot of experience, and it sucks. But like, if you're in a big bracket pool, that's all you can hear about is the Kansas injuries. Like everyone's going to pick that against them. I think it's almost a leverage spot in big pools.
Yeah, it's a great point. Like no one's going to pick. They might pick. Everyone might pick Samford, and then if you Kansas won, they might get Gonzaga in the next round. Everyone's taking Gonzaga there. It's a great point for the big, big pools that you're in to have some of that leverage. Cause I mean, who picked the Final Four last year? Like Jesus. Those teams. I mean, if you can get somebody through like that, you're in a great spot.
Okay. Let me give you a couple super duper low information takes that I've had in the last week that I need you to ground truth them for me. We're going to start with St. Mary's in the West. And I know you got vested interest in 1 and 2 meeting for the Final Four, but, I don't know, man, St. Mary's hits a bunch of buttons, but it's a bunch of buckets for me here. Experienced big men, elite offensive rebounding. You know, they match up well, I think, especially if it's 1-5 North Carolina, St. Mary's, do you think they suffer from the same thing that Gonzaga tends to suffer from, where they go up against the Blue Bloods and it's just the quality of competition they've faced all year has not been good enough to prepare them for that moment?
Certainly possible. But I mean, they'll give North Carolina a fight. They also, to our tempo conversation before, they play very slow.
Yep.
I think it's 358 in the country. How many teams are there? So that's near dead last. They're gonna muck it up. So I'm not a fan of, as a UNC future holder, I'm not a fan of St. Mary's being up in that region. Because I don't disagree that they'll muck it up, and I would not be shocked if they beat North Carolina.
Okay. Yes.
I have them underseeded slightly, which is funny.
Oh, really? As a five?
Yeah, I mean, it would have been really like a slight underseeding where it's like, okay, oh, they would have been, you know, they'd have been in the same area. Like they would have still ended up a four and probably facing the one in the same kind of area anyway. So not a ton, but it really, yeah, it's one of those teams where, again, I'm too old and washed. It's even worse for you, Tim, who lives in the East Coast, like staying up for a St. Mary's game.
Hey,
some of these conference tournament games that, you know, were in Vegas, they were kicking off at like 11:30 p.m. Eastern.
Mega late, and yeah.
If they were started on time. So okay. Yeah, I don't know if I have a strong grasp on Gonzaga or St. Mary's, but anyone I talked to who liked North Carolina was terrified of this team.
Yeah, I'd be interesting that you have St. Mary's underseed. Is that just because they swept Pepperdine?
You know, I was looking at some old brackets. You know who else beats? I should have worn my I have the 83 North Carolina State shirt.
Oh, man.
North Carolina, you know what?
Wow.
North Carolina Wolfies, State.
Yeah.
That year, they were in the 6-11 game. They won the conference tournament.
Okay.
Just saying.
Just saying. They beat Pepperdine in double overtime in the first game.
Okay. I like it. All right. That's one that you sounds like you kind of validated that one. I like that. Okay.
Well, let me ask you St. Mary's then. Do you like them? What are they? I think they're 10-1 to win the West.
Yeah, I like that. I bet that one. Okay. That's in there. Yeah. Well, that was kind of why. I mean, like North Carolina, and you know, you're giving me hell. Like I'm somehow biased here. Like all I'm looking at is 307th in the country in turnover defense. They run into somebody shooting well, or a game that is fewer possessions, or a team that rebounds like champions, like the St. Mary's Gales.
They're huge. They have a lot of size.
They're huge. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Vet Biggs still a thing in college basketball?
Guard play is a thing to say now, but it doesn't hurt to have huge ass rim protectors. Remember that USC team from a few years ago? That,
oh man,
you couldn't drive on them.
Mobley's team. Yeah.
Also, Mobley. North Carolina needs to get past Wagner first. They won, so you never know. Staten Island.
Our matchup set.
Staten Island zone. Right. That's
congrats
right.
Congrats to the Wagner Wags.
There's some, I feel like all the weird, wild, like crazy, like takeoffs are coming in the West here. New Mexico mushed? Fully sufficiently mushed or what?
Kind of feels like it. I certainly don't want to bet Clemson in the first round.
Can you explain why this has happened? Like why they were the team? Because I honestly, like I looked at the numbers and New Mexico, I was like, toss. Like I did not see this coming.
If you had to seed them, let's just say you're putting your bracket together. Where's New Mexico for you? Because obviously the market says they're underseeded. They're a favorite in this matchup.
A 9 seed, maybe. Not much better. They're not like they're not getting up to that 7 line. But I think it has gotten a little bit too far with the publics all over them. Are they still favored by? I haven't looked at this.
They were two point
favorites here.
Yeah. I don't love it.
This has been bouncing around a little bit, actually. So I don't know. That's interesting. That's an interesting market. I honestly just didn't see it coming. Is it more about like hating Clemson or literally loving New Mexico? Because like you see people taking New Mexico in that game, and then they're like, well, they're already here. They could be Baylor too. Baylor's good as hell. What? Like, why are people putting? Why is New Mexico? How did New Mexico get to be some sort of darling? I'm very surprised by this.
Yeah, I can't fully explain it, but I mean, Clemson's definitely certainly not someone I'm backing. So I get the going against that. I do get that, but New Mexico getting past Baylor. I don't know. Even though, I mean, Baylor's defense has been pretty poor of late, but I don't know if New Mexico can keep up with it.
Okay. Seventh fastest team in the country, New Mexico. Bottom 50 3-point rate. So they're literally doing it the hard way, the fast way. Count me out. out on New Mexico. Do you think, and James Cole's asked the question that I was going to ask you, but are we at the point now where there is a premium on the 12s, right? Like the 5-12 nonsense has gotten pretty ridiculous. And like, you know, sometimes it is literally just a public landslide to take this particular dog. But sometimes it's just the way that the NCAA seeds these. They either put a vulnerable, you know, goodish team, they drop them down into the five team with hurt, like the Novas from, what was the Nova five team, five seed a couple years ago that was, you know, like had two of their two best players were unavailable. Like, you know, is, are you seeing, or do you have a, just a general kind of macro thought on 12 versus five matchups and the way the market's treating these?
Yeah, I think they get more and more popular each year with the being that people want the 12 seed. Look at, like, I don't think I've seen anyone pick Wisconsin. I don't think, like, James Madison is like UConn right now. Same with
well, Will UConn's Wade. Vulnerable. James Madison's infallible. Yes,
that's true. Will Wade at McNeese, he's been popular, but I mean, I like Gonzaga in that game. I don't really love the 1-12 seed, but they got a bad matchup is Grand Canyon against your St. Mary's team. And then a UAB, and they're not any good. I don't like them. So
yeah, it's always the one that nobody UAB's likes. No good. It'll be Grand Canyon.
Then it's team, it'll be
it's
UAB.
It's a 12 seed that nobody likes. They always win by like 15. But yeah, it becomes such a public thing. Like, oh, these 12s win a lot. Like, yeah, and it just gets out of there, and you do end up seeing some public darlings. Some
it's
public
more so money the those. It more so feels like the 11s are more successful. I don't have the data in front of me, but that just feels like it's been over the past few tournaments. Even Oregon's been a popular one now too. It seems like there's a lot of a love there, coming off the Pac-12 run.
Point, Drew, that fast-paced New Mexico team, I did pull up Hoop Math. They're 20th in the nation as far as percentage of shots in transition. Almost 29% of their shots are taken in transition offense. So
I love
it. I mean, if you turn the ball over a bunch against them, they're going to do it.
Yep.
I have two round one bets, and they're both 15 seeds. Which of these was the stupider bet? Peacocks plus 20.5 and La Playa plus 20.5.
La Playa. The Long Beach State Beach.
They're the dirtbags in baseball, which is a great name.
I guess the Peacocks. I mean, I like the Long Beach look. That. Tennessee is, I just feel like they're just going to swallow them up on defense. But we've also seen Tennessee can kind of go without points for a while too. So, but if I had to choose it, I would be. The St. Peter's one is one I don't like it much.
Okay. Well, maybe I'm a sucker for, what do you call it?
Blood for punishment?
No. When you're like reminiscing about good times.
St. Peter's.
St. Peter's offense is just,
it
ain't there. Like, that's a really tough Tennessee defense. Like, that might just be an under game where,
hey, man,
if Tennessee can't score for 3 minutes, like, nobody might score for 3 minutes.
No one gave us a chance against Kentucky, Andy. And that was the only, like, long shot that won that year.
That was such a fun
Everybody game. Else lost.
That's the thing. It's so hard. I went back and looked, and I'm sure you've done this too, Tim. It's go back and look at, like, the teams that lost early, like the high seeds that lost early. And it's like, yeah, this was a shitty defense. But then you go back and look at last year. It's like, hey, here's another really shitty defense. I think it was San Diego State.
No, San Diego State.
No. God, I gotta find it now. I'm gonna look, but there was another one last year. It's like, oh, this was San Diego State was a great defense. They were in the finals. Miami.
Final great 14. One, great call.
Yeah. Not even a top 100 defense.
Out of nowhere.
So you say like, oh, these teams are shitty defenses.
Buck every trend.
Sometimes it's path. Sometimes it's just how those other teams play that day. But it isn't just, oh, this is a bad defense. They're going to fall to somebody. That team made the Final Four.
Drake should have beaten them in round.
Yeah, that's a lot of it.
Very much so.
It's a single elimination tournament.
So. Yes, it is. It is. It's a one and done, as they say. All right. I had some more kind of rapid fire thoughts, but any other like kind of key alpha that you gleaned as you went through your process developing the sheet?
Not necessarily. It's really, there's so many different, we've talked about it a lot, but there's so many different data points out there that it's sometimes it's tough to just narrow everything down. And like, if you're not watching the games, if you're not familiar with some teams, like, you could easily just have these numbers sway you in one way or the other and be completely wrong about them if you're not really plugged in. But there's not really anything else that stood out so far overall. There's a lot of other smaller things that kind of pop out, but probably didn't answer your question, Darius. But
wanted your general opinion. Okay. A lot of people have probably tuned in for this, so let's just talk about it. The ball thing was maybe it may end up being a little bit of a fizzle this year because a lot of conference tournaments picked up the Wilson, Evo, NXT. And last year there were, I think, like something like 18 games where you could pick on this. And this year there's going to be perilously few. You have three categories this year, right? Like, there's teams who's over the balance of the entire season use the Nike or the Spalding. And then in the conference tournament, they got a chance, like a game or two with the Wilson. And then there's teams that have never touched them. Like, basically, like, almost the entire ACC is going to be handling the Wilson for the first time.
I have a theory on this.
Hey, let me kind of close the loop here. Big 12 conference tournament, they used it. That everybody shot pretty well. Big 10 conference tournament used it. Everybody shot pretty well. SEC conference tournament, everybody used it, and they shot really poorly. Pac-12, everybody used it. They shot pretty poorly. So it was like kind of a mix. There was kind of mixed signal from the conference tournaments proper. And I think we're only going to get probably about, from the looks of it, about 10 bites at the apple this year. And if that, a lot of these teams have at least touched it once. So tough to say if this is going to be a thing, but fingers crossed. What do you think? What's your theory, Andy?
I think the fact that we know about it means coaches know about it. And they can go buy this ball and run some practice.
Use them to practice. That's a very good thing.
I think that's why you get the mix. Like, it's one of those 1 year angles where,
yeah.
You've heard in the NBA, you've heard players complain about ball changes like the day it happens. So I mean, these kids, they know, and they're gonna bring it up. The coaches know, the assistants know. Like, fuck, we're not dealing with this again. We're gonna run some practices with this stupid sticky ball.
Yeah, Big East, Big East in the ACC. Just if you're scoring it on Big East in the ACC, are the two conferences that are kind of well represented in this tournament that don't have a ton of experience. Did you any buzz about this at all at the Big East tournament? Out of curiosity, anyone hear anything there? No,
I did
nobody.
Not
no, it was they were using basically everybody used Nike balls in the regular season and Nike balls in the Big East, so. That was interesting. Yeah, no, the Big Ten was interesting because almost everybody that is good used Nike all season and then switched to the Wilson. And in some instances, there was a clear signal, and in others, it was like, oh no, everybody was very comfortable with it, which made me think, like Andy brought up, like they practiced with it all week. Yeah. So nobody was.
We put up a few hundred free throws with this. It's fine.
Yeah, everything's fine.
Okay. Yeah, did you went to some games at the. The Garden?
I was at the I kind of popped in for the St. John's Seton Hall game. I didn't catch the whole game, but I caught the end to see a win when we thought we were going to be in the tournament. The atmosphere is always it's electric. It's the best tournament. Not that I've been to many other conference tournaments, but just the Garden sold out, getting four games in one day. It's a marathon drinking day too. So it's a fun time.
Yeah, no, there's so many. Now that we have tournaments in Atlantic City, there's like five in Vegas. There's one in Lake Charles, Louisiana. Like we're really starting to embrace these gambling towns. And that, it just kind of harkens to a point, and I know you follow a lot of basketball, but some of these people, like, and again, it was something that came up in this other podcast. You said like, what about the guys who just haven't followed basketball a lot all year? Like, it seems like a lot of work for you know, digging into this, digging into that. And I said, well, you know, do you have a favorite team? I bet you know that conference pretty well. You know, instead of going and trying to figure out a West Coast team versus some shit team from like the CAA, when you just go, you know, break down all the ACC games if that's what you watch. So I feel like sometimes you can be too close to it. But I mean, people who do have a home team, it feels like they do know their conference games a little better and have a feel for that. So maybe that's some good advice for how to keep you from betting every single fucking game out there is just concentrate on some of the shit you know.
I dig it. One of my favorite things to try to predict is what is the first upset we're going to get, like the first real upset we're going to get on Thursday. Because like I have this theory, a working theory that I have no data and no backup. It's just in the back of my head. I feel like the first wave of games, there's a little bit of tightness, right? Like before there's, you know, I feel like that very first wave, you have some of the, remember when Baylor got beat by that, was it Yale? Like a super bad team, like 3:14. And yeah. it was like a 9 a.m. West Coast tip. And I'm like, wow, man, this game is really tipping early. And sure enough, like it was close late and the Baylor guys just choked like dogs down the stretch. I don't even know if it was Yale, but it was some, oh no, it was like a
Colgate.
Colgate
plays them this week.
I'm
trying to think who plays Baylor.
Yeah, Baylor is Colgate.
Yeah,
Baylor is Colgate this week. But yeah, every year there's a big one early. Last year's first upset from memory was Furman taking down the Cavs, the Virginia Cavaliers, in the 12-5, I think. And then right away, Arizona got popped. Ooh. And they did Arizona 0.0 favors by having them tip at 11 a.m. Pacific time against La Playa. You think, is there any merit to the idea that, you know, when games are just getting going and in general, like the early tip, which again is a very obvious and very well-priced NBA thing. Like tipping early is, you know, and being out of your general routine is never good. You got any thoughts on if that's a thing?
You can't ignore it, right? Like this, it's already too there. These kids are, who knows when they get to the city that they're playing in to get acclimated to that time. But
sure,
yeah, no, 11 a.m. tip time, that's no fun for anybody. And are you really getting up for a game against Long Beach? Like, it's, you go down early, then you're going to be up real quick. But
yeah, they fired their coach. We're going to beat them by 20. Who do we,
he's house money.
He's still sitting there. Well, and kind of the same point, Jim, did you look at this at all? Some of these teams, yeah, who wants a stapler? Did you look at some of the at-larges, excuse me, some of the automatic bids who haven't played for a week? Did you dig into any of that? I hadn't had time to look back at that, but it's like, I wonder if that's good or bad. These teams have had like, you know, they had a conference championship on like Saturday or Sunday of last week. And now they're not going to play until like Thursday. It's a big chunk. Like they haven't had that much time off since Christmas.
Kind of long.
It's a long time. You haven't had that much time off since Christmas break.
It's a while, and who knows how often these guys are practicing too. I mean, I doubt it's every day. It's
rest versus rest.
Yeah, it's not something that I've dug in deep on, but that's worth looking at.
I think they're practicing every day, but they're probably disrupted on travel days. There's probably something weird going on.
Teams mind though, it's so bad. So you don't get to actually play games.
So gut reaction, Duquesne have a chance to beat BYU in the 11-6
at
the 9:40 a.m. tip-off?
They're bad.
They're bad. Okay.
Got a good team.
Okay.
And BYU, might shoot – I think they shoot the most threes in the country. I think their three-point rate is like a little over 50%, which is alarming. If they're missing, they're bricking, they could lose that game, but Duquesne is not good.
I gotcha. How about I kind of wanted to put a line through them anyway. Okay, so then Akron, Creighton, are the Zips, the A to Z's, are the Zips good enough to take down the Creighton Blue Jays? Creighton, by the way, who seems to have some very questionable, very bright red cells in their Bart Torvik resume. Should they be on upset alert?
I don't think they can get it done. I think it'll be a closer game than people think. And I think a lot of people bet Akron when that game opened. Okay. I think it'll be a little bit closer. So possibly.
Okay. Well, that's one that I have circled for a first half under, by the way, because the Creighton Blue Jays were Nike Elite Nike, and the Akron Zips were Nike and Spalding Legacy. So neither of those teams has competed a full contest with the Wilsons. So the next would be La Playa against Arizona, Wagner against North Carolina. We don't think that's realistically an upset, right?
No, probably not, right? I don't think so.
Morehead State, Illinois.
Maybe Morehead State.
Morehead State, Illinois.
I just don't like Illinois. Something
it's
about them.
It's a shit defense. It's sloppy.
Yes, that's the main reason. Morehead State, I mean, they're not good, but I would not be – my jaw wouldn't be on the floor if Illinois lost in the first round.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'm going to circle. I'm going to say it's 50-50 between Morehead State and the Zips. Because Creighton's got the double whammy. They can't create offense. They can't create turnovers on defense, and they can't get offensive rebounds. So, like, if they're at a deficit in a game where they shouldn't be losing, forget about it. Like, it's over. Like, honestly. And, by the way, they barely ever get to the free throw line. They have this weird, gigantic hole in their ultimate resume. So I'll go with the Zips as the first upset, and we'll give Tim Morehead State.
You know which league has the lowest free throw rate in the country as a league?
What?
The Big
the
East.
The MAC? The Big East. Big East does? Oh, so it is the refs?
32 for 32. I wonder about that.
Gotta be the refs.
With the reffing, because when it is dead bleeping last with a bullet, you know, lower than the Ivy League and the CAA. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a really low, so something to look at. I'd encourage you whenever you see a really glaring stat that's either a warning both ways. If this is like, oh my God, they're amazing at this, or they're horrible at this, look at how the conference in general does, or look at certain factors, like, is it a fast-paced conference? Is it a large conference? Is there a lot of good bigs? Is there a lot of good front courts? Is this a reason maybe why they, you know, this is that and the other thing? So it's such a fucking hard puzzle. I mean, how many pages did you write for the damn thing this year, Tim?
I think we're at 32 this year.
Yeah, it's a lot of puzzling.
Yeah, it definitely is. One thing that's, I don't know if this is necessarily fun for people because not many people like unders, but over like the past, money. Yeah, that's true. First half unders in, so games at the same site where, let's say, first game tips off at 12, whenever this next scheduled game, if that game tips off, if it's delayed by 15 or more minutes, last year, first half unders were 12 and 5, and full game unders were 11 and 6. So 23 and 11 overall. Since 2019, there are 68, 36, and 2. So first half, 34, 19, and 1. And games, 34, 17, and 1. Doesn't include, obviously, 2020, the COVID year. And then 2021, they all played in different arenas. So those 2 years are excluded. But somebody keeping an eye on.
Okay. Wow, man. I'm gonna rewind that.
I think you're dead wrong. People do love shit like that.
No, I gotta rewind that.
It doesn't matter. Yeah,
honestly, like, you want to have some skin in lots of games that you're gonna sit around and watch, just find something like random like this. Like, you just want something that's gonna be coin flip by enough that you're entertained for, you know, the entire thing. Like, and if you've ever been to
the 15,
yeah, giant watch parties, that's the entire game. Like, people playing the dogs on the race to 10, race to 15, race to 20, whatever, and you're sitting around at the watch party, and all of a sudden, randomly, the entire half the room erupts because a team just got a put back layup. You're like, what?
the first time I was in Vegas for March, I'm like, what happened? Like,
yeah, did I miss something?
Somebody had to explain, like, oh, everybody bet the first to 15. Yeah. On this underdog, and it's like 15 to 13, and then they lose, like, you know, 85-42 or whatever it was. But they came out hot. That's something to dig into. Like, find some teams that have come out hot, find some teams that had good first halves.
Yeah.
Find some teams that start slow. Bet against.
By the way, correction and retraction. When Baylor got upset by Yale, that was a 12-5. The previous year,
Georgia State.
They were Georgia State. You remember? Did you remember? Or did you look that up?
Somebody had it in the chat.
Oh, somebody had it in the chat. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Donaldson. I can't steal his credit.
Yeah, it was Georgia State. That was the one where the dad was on like the little kneeling on the scooter, and his kid was just lighting up the
fell over.
That's right. His kid went to the NBA, played for the Celtics. Am I tripping? I don't remember. I think he did. I think he had a cup of coffee in the NBA. Although I don't know. Yeah, Ron Hunter and his son was RJ Hunter, and he did have a cup of coffee with the Celtics. He played, and then he had a cup of coffee with the Maine Red Claws, and then a cup of coffee with the Chicago Bulls, and then a cup of coffee with the Windy City Bulls, the Long Island Nets, the Rio Grande Valley Vipers, the Houston Rockets.
Some of those don't sound like.
The Rio Grande Valley Vipers, the Erie BayHawks, back with the Celtics in the Maine Red Claws, and then he went to he learned Turkish, and
probably should have played done that for
Turk, if you, Turk Telecom, and Galatasaray, Andy's team.
Oh God,
he's had a long career.
That is my team.
I was getting somewhere.
That is my team. If you want to go NBA to NCAA. Connections, maybe we are backing James Madison, a young man, big old dude. Think he plays, I mean, at least I think he's their center. TJ Bickerstaff, son of I can't think of the dad's name. What's the coach's name?
JB
Bickerstaff. I knew it was just two more letters. Yeah.
They like the initials there. Huh?
Your fourth place finisher for coach of the year this year, probably.
No big deal. Mm-hmm. Stetson in Oakland, first to 14-15, says Donaldson. Can't fade him.
Ooh, he knows what he's talking about. He came up with Georgia State before anyone else. Okay. So just rapid fire teams to watch for the ball. Vermont, Duquesne, Dayton, NC State, Duke, Clemson, North Carolina, Virginia, UConn, Marquette, Creighton, Longwood, Western Kentucky, Yale, St. Peter's, Akron, Howard. Oh, Howard's already done. Wait a second. We can test this right now. Howard played who? Wagner. Wagner, they played with the Evo, with the Wilson all year long. Probably how they got the better of Howard today. Although, did they cover?
They won.
They were a three-point dog.
Okay. We'll see. They went out right because they were familiar with the ball.
There we go.
That's just math.
It might have been that they're just two really bad teams. Howard's a tough hang.
San Diego State, Boise State, Nevada. And then we're running out here. Colgate. That's it. That's the whole list. Everybody else has either played with the Wilson all season long or used it in their conference tournament. Unbelievable.
Gun to your head, Tim, a 13 or 14 that wins outright.
Ooh.
He already picked Morehead State.
Yeah.
He did pick Morehead State. I want a different one.
Okay. Let's see. 13 or 14.
Then I'm going to hold him to this so hard.
Yeah, that's fair. That's why I'm trying to unpick him.
Can we kill Alabama?
Yeah. Yes. Give me Charleston.
Thank you. I love it.
Alabama. All right. I love it.
The last time they lost, February 1st, running hot.
Charleston? Really?
Yeah.
They haven't lost since February 1st?
They ripped. Yeah, they've won like 12 or 13 straight. They ripped through the CAA.
We go back? Speaking of ripping through and having not
good,
lost.
It's a really good offense.
When is the last time the Dukes lost?
James Madison?
Yes.
Oh.
And also, you know, they set that whole little section of the bracket up so that the lead on Monday can be
even
Dukes
longer,
Duke, right?
Appalachian State, Duke. January 27th.
Jeez, it's a nice time. They only lost three times all year, right?
Yeah.
Started off their season with the win against Michigan State, if I'm not crazy.
In overtime.
Team seated above them. Interesting. Huh. Is it just a mush stink on James Madison, or is there some reason to think that they're not actually as good as
everyone? Like once a team gets like trendy, like, people start hating them. It's like, public dog, can't bet them. Bet who you want.
Okay. What they're playing in Brooklyn, right? Wisconsin, and they can. I mean, I guess it's not that big of a spread. James Madison can beat Wisconsin, and then they definitely have a realistic chance to beat Vermont, right? I'm pulling an Andy with the tweet looking forward to.
People all mad. It's... Yeah.
No, in seriousness, I think Duke is. I'm surprised that there are very smart people in the space who have sincere belief that Duke is going to do anything special. But we'll see. Maybe I'm just biased because I want Houston to go. I'm full on Cougar Town. You think? Am I right in saying that the South is the softest bracket for any of the one seeds? Like in general, there's. Kind of, does Houston have the softest path through the Final Four?
Yeah, it's okay. Certainly not UConn, and certainly not North Carolina, like we discussed. And Purdue, I mean, something about Purdue. I don't know if it's Matt Painter.
Okay.
He loves losing before.
Help me find the team. Purdue's run ends where?
Gonzaga.
Stage of elimination. Gonzaga, really? Gonzaga.
Yeah.
Zaga's got him. Okay.
I mean, okay. Would I be shocked if Purdue blows him out by 20? No, but I mean, I think you actually mentioned it earlier in the week. Purdue's defense is kind of leaking oil a little bit. Okay. And to kind of the point before, if Edie gets into foul trouble, I mean, we kind of saw it on Sunday in the first half. I think was it Sunday or was it Saturday? One of the first halves of the Big Ten games where – he was on the bit two fouls right away. He's on the bench. Yeah. That changes their whole dynamic. So I don't mind taking a shot on Gonzaga. I think they're also 10-1 to win the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
Worth a stab. I don't think they would get past Tennessee. But we've seen Tennessee go cold on offense if what's his name isn't going off. I'm forgetting his name off the top of my head. But we know who we're talking about.
I don't really have a strong read one way or the other on what is wrong with Tennessee's offense. Is this a Rick Barnes thing or is it just a personnel thing?
I think it's more personnel. People are going to want to pile on Rick Barnes though, because he's had similar to Matt Painter, just not as much success in the tournament, but I think it's more personnel based because, I don't have the guy's name in front of me. I'm embarrassed for
talking about the top scorer, Dalton.
Yes, there it is. Thank you. Okay. Yes.
Sure.
If he's off, he doesn't have really the surrounding core to kind of pick him up. So if he's not scoring 25 plus, I think they're in trouble.
Dude, he shoots 40% from three.
Yeah, he's awesome to watch.
Yeah.
And he shoots deep threes too. That would be the only thing I think really holding back from. Same with a bullet. Hey, Tennessee's Final Four.
Okay, I dig it. Weird question that we didn't necessarily prepare you for because we are NBA men. Any players that you haven't seen a ton of this year that you're kind of keen on getting a feel for, or think can make like a little pre sort of draft riser buzz? That we should keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean this year's. I think it's pretty well known. This draft is pretty weak, but
This is kind of like the combine for
it is.
Yeah, man.
No, dude. No, here. Let me ask you the same question in a different way. Over under half a player that it plays in the tournament is selected in the top five. That's how bad this class is.
I'll say over just because that's I don't think ultimately
you just need someone, one guy. You just need one team and one guy.
Yeah, you need one guy. But there's not necessarily anyone that I like. You're not going to see like USC, isn't it? Everyone will want to see what Bronny James is looking like. Who knows what that would be if he could take a leap, maybe up draft boards. But they're not in the tournament, so it doesn't matter. There's not like an exciting. I mean. What is your guys' opinion of Edie?
I think if he goes in round one, then somebody's done him a favor.
Yeah, it's a weird fit at the next level, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean he might be
how
like
many,
a
how Kessler many how
guy.
Many true
I don't know. Can he be
how
his,
many
like,
true centers are there in the NBA right now today?
Is it
because those guys are just freaks? Those two are MVP caliber players that just happen to be that big.
I mean, they're not even true centers because they're facilitated. No, well, but, Jokic is a facilitator.
However you want to put those two.
And more, Embiid is more of a post player anyway. So, yeah, I don't know.
Happen to be that big.
One guy, I guess, would be Reed Shepard from Kentucky. He's probably
top five. Not top five. He's like 15-ish range, right?
Most of the other top five guys are either overseas or France or G League.
There's
guys.
A couple of French. There's the other French guy. There's two or three French guys. I looked at an NBA mock.
Nikolai Topic.
Buddy, I don't know.
There's three international guys and two G League guys, I think, that realistically probably go top five, which is insane. Reed Shepard could go top five. Cody Williams from Colorado could go top five, but he needs to play better. He needs to play his way in, honestly.
And then you're looking at Filipowski from Duke, probably, and then the center from UConn, Klingham.
Yeah.
It's really not a very appetizing NBA prospects.
Interesting. happened?
The Australian kid, I forgot about him, Alex Saar.
Okay.
Now you drove me nuts, and I actually pulled up a mock draft.
Yes.
We went France, Australia, G League.
Well, he plays in Perth, but he's French as well.
Yeah.
Saar. Yeah.
But he plays for Perth, so he's Australian now.
Either way,
that's how the rules work.
They make you do that. And then, they have Reed Shepard fourth and Topic fifth.
So you set a pretty good line there, over under a half, top five. So
unreal. I think honestly, Edie's probably borderline top 32, I would say. If he goes in the top 32, then again, somebody's done him a solid.
They have Connect at 12 to the Bulls. Yeah. Edie, so this is a mock from The Athletic. They have Edie in the 21st to the Knicks. Sorry, Dylan. I had to that. No. If you see my face,
the Knicks have so many good things.
You see my face light up when I saw that.
Thank you.
The Knicks have like the second most efficient big in the NBA in Isaiah Hartenstein.
He's gonna get paid.
He is. He's a good player. You can win with him. Final predictions here. Final four. Who's your how many brackets?
Fucking flags.
Before that, kind of tell me about your bracket. Outlook. I'm assuming the FSM bracket matters the most, and I'm sorry I keep winning that.
Painful experience.
I've had the winner 3 years in a row, so I'm running hot. I don't think I won all 3 years, but I definitely had the correct winner. Somebody beat me last year, I think. Might have been BP, I forget. How many brackets do you enter? And in general, do you do same bracket in every one, or do you try to tailor your brackets to kind of this optimize your win probability of the given pool?
Yeah, I'll do a couple brackets. I'm not as much brackets focused as I'm more in like survivor pools and things of that nature, or like ATS capture pools. Those are fun. But if I do multiple brackets, it's not going to be the same one. Because if that goes down in flames, then it's just out the window. Okay. I like to do a couple different ones. FSM one, I'll do my best to be on top of the board this year again. The last year was a mess.
Okay.
I always say I'm going to do like multiple, versions, but then, I run out of time and, you have another ESPN one. What if I just pull my bracket from the other one I made? Like six of the same. I've gotten so many emails from like every contest I've ever entered. I try to set aside. It's nice that we did this a day early. So I have tomorrow night. I just set aside a 2-hour block to like enter all these contests.
Yeah.
Just pissing away money, $50 at a time for bracketless brackets, which I believe is just like Survivor. There's some other Survivor ones or some just good bracket contests. I usually, if somebody has some free ones, I'll always enter those just because you're already on a site where I have a bracket. I'm just copying it over. Fuck it.
Okay. So who, plant some flag. The men who are the players in the FSM pool, they're men of integrity. They're not going to steal your picks. Who plant your final four flag and your champion flag for the FSM pool? I'm just curious where you're going. Where you're
at? East, I'm going UConn. I can't.
Don't overthink it.
West, I'm going Arizona.
Okay.
South, this is where I kind of go away. I'm going Duke.
Oh, buddy. All right.
I got them over Houston, and then I really don't think Marquette.
Yeah, the bottom Texas, half of that. Yeah, bottom really half of that bracket that. Is bottom half of the South is weak sauce. Yeah.
And then I'll go Tennessee out of the Midwest.
Okay.
Then I've got Arizona and Tennessee in the final. And because I have an Arizona future, I'll pick Tennessee.
Hey man, if Arizona gets there and they gotta go against UConn and Tennessee, guess what they got going for them? Those games would be played in Glendale, Arizona.
I filled one out today, went Creighton UConn final just because that's fun. Fun storyline. Like,
if I'm right, you're going to be the first one that's going to be able to say my bracket's been busted, and you're going to have a whole big crybaby tweet about it. That'll be sweet.
Back for more. I'm just happy I remembered. I'm like, because after that joke I made about it's 50 to enter, 100 if you are in this chat and forget to enter.
You didn't enter last year.
Well, no, I forgot to enter last year. I got so busy, I don't even think I was in it. And I keep not getting drawn for the home run derby. I'm like, I got to get in one of these damn contests. Oh, somebody's asking here, Tim, what is ATS capture? I'm intrigued by that.
There's no skill whatsoever. You just get assigned a random team. So let's say you get Houston in the first round. If they cover, or actually a better example is, let's say you get Longwood in the first round. If they cover against Houston, you capture Houston and you get them in the next round.
Fuck, that's fun.
Totally. No skill whatsoever. It's another just fun.
It's like Super Bowl squares. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool as hell. Real quick on Calcutta strategy, I'll just give you my two cents on this because I played a lot of them. Do your best job of estimating the pool size before you start. There's two things. You just use Bart Torvik's probabilities, or just use him at Downway Houston, because Bart, for whatever reason, loves Houston. He's the only person on earth who loves Houston more than me. Nice. And then kind of do a good job of estimating the pot size, and just in general the betting appetite of your players. And then bid early. Get a couple of teams early. In fact, get the first team. You don't like them? I don't care. Get them. Like, the expected value almost always tilts in favor of the early teams, especially if
it'll be the best value. It almost
especially always if is. You're in a pool of inexperienced players, almost always. And then bid up your opponents late. Find a couple guys who actually don't have anyone.
Yes.
They have no teams, and when they're bidding on someone late, just take them to the cleaners. Make them pay for it.
On the early side of things too, the one seed, the first one seed is usually, I find, the cheapest to go.
No question. And
everyone's bidding everyone up. So no get that question. First one. Get your Drew, get Houston.
Get your one, and then everything else breaks your way after that.
I'm gonna have to find an ATS capture. That's a fun one. I play in just the dumbest. You think that one's no skill? I play in one where what is it? 32 people send this one guy $100. Uh-huh. And then at the bar last night, he draws the names. You get two teams.
Oh, you get two teams.
You get two random teams.
Yeah. And we play that way with 20 guys. And that's a ton of fun. But
it's just because you can end up like legitimately, you can end up with 2-6. And I've ended up like a 15 and a 16. You get your money back at the Elite Eight. So, like, it's just like, oh, that was a donation. It is fun because he just sends the picture of the whole sheet. It's fun to look at, like, the ones that really got fucked. Like, oh, God, you're done. But I ended up with NC State and McNeese. So
that was like the pool that Newman did last year for baseball. You remember that?
Yeah.
What was that?
No, his was a 13 league. Remember?
Yeah, yeah, but it was like, you just got assigned a random team.
Oh, 13 run pool.
Score exactly.
Yeah,
13
run pool. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was a ton of fun.
Here's a fun question for you. I know these markets might not even be up yet. I feel like these go up.
Are they not?
I feel like they go up around the Sweet 16 for the most part. If they're up now, there's just, it's like 200% hold, and I don't know if I'd get too involved, but do you have any names you're thinking about for most outstanding player?
I'm going to see if there's, there might be a market already.
Juwan Rogers. Don't overthink it.
TJ Bickerstaff.
I don't see a market here.
Juwan Roberts. Sorry, did I say Rogers? I meant Roberts. Juwan Roberts.
DraftKings has it. 365 has it, according to the chat.
All right, let's see if we can pull that up here.
Madden's props.
Okay, while you're pulling that up, we haven't talked zero Survivor strategy. I don't know that I have one because I've only ever played 1 year and I got far, but I wasn't really in contention when I looked at what teams I had left. You got any thoughts on like general strategy for Survivor? Like you go for specific seeds at each round when you kind of just have to take the best 8-9 in round ones because you know they're going to lose to the one type of deal.
Yeah, that's definitely one strategy. Okay. It's first round is if you can kind of look at the second round matchup where you know a team just has no chance whatsoever. That's always good. But also teams like you just don't like that are you don't think are going to go far that other people might. So like a Creighton, for example, like if you don't like Creighton, like get them out of the way, use them.
Okay.
That off the bat, because the worst I've done this in years past where you get to the final four, the Elite Eight, if you're still in it and you got one team left, two teams left, you fuck yourself and you're out because you don't have enough teams to use. So you definitely don't want to go top heavy with your best teams. One seeds, unless you think a one seed's going to be susceptible in like a Sweet 16 or Elite Eight and are comfortable picking against them. Survivor pools are fun, man.
Okay.
Yeah, you got to find someone who has just horrible value in the next round.
Yeah, you want the biggest delta between your expected win probability in the round you're picking them in and their expected win probability in the next round. Like, right? Like that's ultimately what you're trying to do. You're basically doing the opposite of the ATS capture. You want to be playing a team that you'll ultimately be picking against in the next round. Yeah. So that you don't get stuck that way. How about like the end game strategy is so fucking hard, man. Like it's when it's down to eight. Because you
literally have to, like, the way the brackets are set up, you have to leave yourself certain teams against each other because you're going to run into the issue of, oh, I have UNC. UNC is the only team I have left, and you're screwed because if you can't hold them till the final four, you got to use them if they're your only team left, and then you run out of teams. I've just seen so many people run out of teams, and they don't think about it enough in the get-go.
And sometimes you can play it smart and you still just run out of teams. It's just these teams, you thought you had an angle. You picked a team that has a terrible matchup the next round. That team, that player gets hurt and that team gets upset as well. And suddenly the team that you really wanted out wins the next four games. And you're looking at it in the final four as a couple teams you can't use anymore.
You know who stands out big time is Nebraska. 61% to win round one, 10% to win round two.
Yeah.
If you can drop off a delta of 50% from round one to round two if you don't have the risk appetite to take a team that only has a 61% win probably, I guess that's one thing. San Diego State's interesting to me because they have like 80% win prob. And then the next round, we're expecting something like 23%. That's a huge step down.
Maybe Kansas.
Kansas, yeah, that's a great call. Yeah, Kansas beating somebody good without their best player, not necessarily something I would call likely. What's Kansas's win probability is? They're about 80%. They're going to drop to about either high 30s, low 40s. That's a nice one. Good call.
Are there specific dates for the Sweet 16 yet? Yes.
We don't know which region. Do we know which region is playing which?
You should
It's the 28th and 29th. I just don't. I'm not sure.
Do we know who
I,
got?
I mean, would you, wouldn't Saturday teams play early, or do they mix that up? That's something to think about. That's something I'm gonna have to dig into, because once they start mixing, you're still in your same region for Sweet 16. You would think Saturday teams play Thursday, Sunday teams play Friday, to give them the same amount of rest. You know what I mean? If you play your round of 32 games.
Yeah, it's totally divorced. It's totally divorced. They reset Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday for Sweet 16. It's totally divorced. There's not a big difference between
4 or 5 days, you know, off, but that's frustrating. It's frustrating because, Ava Hef is pointing out in the chat, if you're listening to this, that some Survivor leagues go by day.
Almost all of them.
Yeah.
Almost mine do.
The bracketless one for sure does.
Yeah.
Maverick McNeely, Brian Harmon, Sam Ryder, Giorgio.
Those are your one and done options?
No, those are, somebody asked for Valspar picks in the chat.
Oh, okay. It's going to be very windy, I think.
22 and hard. Oh my God, the weather's going to be horrible down in that part of the Florida. You know, fuck, you live there, Giorgio. I think you're from Tampa.
Yeah. Okay, you ready for this? So the West and the East are on Thursday, Saturday. Yeah. The South and the Midwest are on
Friday, Sunday.
So the left side of the bracket is on Thursday. The right side of the bracket is on Friday. Which actually helps, because that way you're picking a team that will eventually play. You're picking between two teams where you're picking one to go to the Final Four that you can't use, and you're saving one to go to the Final Four that you will have to use. Like, that's ultimately how it's supposed to be set up.
Yeah, I usually split this Survivor pool with a buddy, and we're on the phone each night for like 45 minutes trying to.
Ridiculous. I've been there. I helped a guy one time who I didn't even have any skin in it. He just like couldn't help but like kind of game theory everything out, and I'm like, look, man, I'm like, you got this. Just believe. Just go with you. What's your heart telling you, man?
Believe in yourself.
Believe in yourself. I don't care anymore.
I still can't find the outstanding player odds for the life of me, but
I don't see him at DraftKings either.
I have the weird New Jersey laws.
Yeah.
That's probably
Like Tim's probably on New York, New Jersey as well.
Yep.
There are different rules in different states about betting on like New York doesn't let you bet Heisman, so I really doubt they're going to let you bet on outstanding player. If somebody has those odds, if you want to screenshot them and like reply to one of the tweets that we have with this live stream, that'd be awesome. Because I live in a state where I'm going to only be able to pull up like the generic one, and they almost always pull it out of Jersey. So I often can't see that. I couldn't get odds for like the MAAC because of the Jersey teams.
Yep.
I had to ask somebody in Illinois to send me screenshots from DraftKings so I could use the legal book screenshots for stuff.
Yeah. Hey, we have a real time test of the Wilson ball angle. You ready?
Yes.
Colorado State used the Wilson Evo Next all year long. Virginia has never touched the thing, unless they have been using it in practice. The first half looks like Colorado State is going to cover, although I don't want to jinx it. 22-14 as we are talking live.
There's also the issue with Virginia just as a full.
No, it's the ball. Team. It's probably the ball.
Got to be the shoes.
Definitely the ball.
Tim,
it's got to be the shoes. I finally watched Air on the plane yesterday. Back from Savannah. Why didn't people talk about that more? That
movie was very good. It was that well received.
It was really good.
You know what else was a good movie? Let's do movie time quick. Blackberry. I watched that the other day.
I watched it on a plane.
Glenn Howerton was good in that.
Like, talk about ideal plane movies, man. Like, Air was awesome. Blackberry was good. I said, that's funny. I watched that on a plane too. Yeah.
Drew and I both watched Poor Things the other day. You watched Poor Things on a plane. I can't imagine watching that on a plane.
Yeah.
I just remember Emma Stone.
Yes.
Yeah. Just like how it started, it's like, I can't imagine there's going to be much for sex scenes in this. And then two straight hours of fucking.
Yeah, the entire middle hour had full frontal seven times. Just ballparking.
It's like, a lot.
I know what I'm doing tonight now.
Yes. Then, yeah. And it was no discrimination by gender either. We saw some weird old Frenchmen's dongs as well as a good amount of Emma Stone. So
yeah. Thank you, tough to watch that on Nolan Rundle. Somebody just tweeted me the most outstanding player odds.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, you know, hat tip to Yorgos for making that movie and having it win Oscars because it was weird. It was weird. All right. Well,
Tim, yeah, talk about the sheet quick.
Yeah, let the people know.
Yeah, go 32 pages, $10. Price hasn't changed in forever. It's going to be the best guide. If you know nothing about college basketball, just get this. It'll guide you through picking brackets. I've had friends, wives, girlfriends pick brackets better than me just going off this sheet. So it's pinned on my Twitter at thold42, madnesssheet.com. $10, best $10 you'll spend on the entire tournament.
I'll put, again, if you want to check it out, because it's just $10 for a shitload of info, I'll put the link in the description of the YouTube and the podcast notes as well, if you want to go, or just at thold42 on Twitter. He's not hard to find.
I'll be here all March.
Well done, man. Let's go, Cougs. Let's go, Cougar Town. I'm looking for the outro music, and away we an hour and 30 minutes of dedicated to college basketball all year. I think that was well worth it.
I enjoyed it. It's the best time of year. I think. Are you watching the games,
Sergio? Vegas. Question mark. Yeah, I'm gonna head to Vegas for Friday, Saturday.
I got invited to a watch party.